Hey everyone, welcome to Horrorspiria. My name is May and I am so stoked because today we have a special episode. It was inspired by our special guests today. I will go ahead and introduce them first. This is Jazz Echevarria. Tell the people, what do you do? What's your deal?
What do I do? I love that question. So I'm an actor, aspiring filmmaker. I've only made one short film back in 2020, which is, it is what it is. 9 to 5, I'm actually an editor, freelance, and I'm helping out on a couple documentaries right now that are in post. In the future, I would like to do more acting, directing, yeah. Hopefully writing. I'm trying to write something right now, but I mean, that's difficult. So, you know, film person, lover of film, you know, trying to make that space.
Yeah, same. Whenever I have to articulate, I'm like, I do, you know, stuff in the film world. Jazz, my perception of you, because I think we just met on like social media and I was like, damn, this person is so fucking cool. I always just thought of you as like a filmmaker, like this media artist, and so I think that's really exciting. I think it's really interesting that you said actor first. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I don't know, I'm just like, you know, because this current thing I'm working on, I'm like, it's my first time like acting in something where like the production felt like super legit.
Oh wow, nice.
So I was like, maybe let me like start off with that. Like, I don't tell people that enough, but I do act, so.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah, embrace it all. Like, we don't have to be one thing. But I mean, the whole reason why we decided to do werewolves, or rather you decided, because I was like, yeah, you choose it. And I was so excited in a way, because I personally, the only werewolf film I had seen, it's like Ginger Snaps, which is definitely one of my favorite films. But then other than that, it was like Good Manners, and that was it. So it gave me an excuse to be like, okay, let me go research this thing. Cause I guess like my perception of werewolf films is like, I don't get them. So it was nice to go on this. But why werewolves? Why did we decide on werewolves? Do you mind explaining why?
Yeah. So this production that I'm in, it's a short film. Hopefully it turns into a series if it does well and we get money. But it's this production called The Wolf Among Us, created by a friend of mine named Brandon Towns, written by him and then Bree Garrett and Kamari Sire. And basically, it's this satirical look at Black love and Black sex and, you know, the modern age. And the premise of it, basically, it's, you know, three friends that work together in this pizza shop, like a Pizza Hut or some shit like that. And new person starts working there, hits it off with one of our main characters, Nala. You know, they go on a date, one thing leads to another, you know, how they usually do sometimes. And yeah, and all like it scratches and turns into a werewolf. So I think that's like as much as I could give away right now. I would say it's more of a comedy, but because of the werewolves and my character, I'm actually not a werewolf, I'm a witch, but because of the elements, I guess it makes it horror. I watched enough movies about witches, but I thinking about it, I just never really watched any werewolf movies. I've seen Ginger Snaps, Good Manners, like you said, which I actually heard of through this podcast. And they're both great movies. But other than that, I didn't really know of any good werewolf movies. American Werewolf in London, which is like the main one.
I actually hadn't seen it until now. It's been one of those films. Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah, it was like one of those movies where it's like,
yeah,
I know about it, but it's like on the list of all the other shit that I told myself I'm watching.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that. First off, I mean, the series that it sounds like you're gonna, well, that you've been working on sounds amazing. It sounds like something that I would actually want to watch. One thing about like werewolf films overall that I have an issue with is that, and especially the films that I ended up choosing the film list mainly because when we went out to do research on this, I found a book called Phases of the Moon written by Craig Ian Mann. It's really in depth, this like book on werewolf films. I feel like up until that point in history, he had pretty much watched every werewolf film, which good for him. One thing that I think is funny that you said is that you were like, yeah, I guess it's a, you know, it's more of like a comedy, but it's a horror because of the werewolf and the witch thing, which on this podcast anyway, you know, it's all about like tropes, right? How are tropes used? And the werewolf is obviously a trope. But I just think inherently every werewolf film is a comedy film. It's very hard for me to take it serious. Even things like Good Manners is probably the most serious, and even Good Manners has like musical breaks, and that's awesome. It's been so hard for me to like want to take werewolves seriously, and I'm not too sure that this venture that we did made me do that. But like what you just described, though, like the series that is also meditation on like Black love and all of these other things, like that's interesting to me. And even like Good Manners and Ginger Snaps, the most interesting aspects of those films for me are like the femininity and the dichotomy of race in Good Manners. So I always feel like it's a very masculine, very Eurocentric, very American centric genre. And I think it's what's always made me be like, yeah, I don't really feel it. I don't know.
No, that's real. Yeah, I never even thought about it like that until now. But yeah, and like thinking about it, like growing up, I can't even think of any films in particular about werewolves that I can like really pinpoint. Like, I remember hearing about like Underworld because like my mom.
Oh, right. I forgot that's like a thing. Yeah. I mean, it was like that era, right? It was like Blade. It was like Underworld. It was like Resident Evil. It was like these action / horror films. You know, like Blade's good. But I know that there are people that love Underworld and Resident Evil. But I never really cared for that genre either.
I haven't seen any of those movies either.
Yeah. I don't know. It wasn't my vibe, but so it's really fun then actually that like, you know, we decided to investigate here. So that's where the inspiration came from. I wanted, you know, you brought up the idea and I thought that was really cool, especially, you know, you to tie back to your own art. Do you know when the series or when the short or series is going to drop?
I don't know. So
okay,
we haven't even started filming. We actually start filming like in 2 weeks.
Oh, amazing. In Chicago?
Yes.
Awesome.
And I'm very excited. And it's just like, I've known about it for like over a year now, but now like, it feels like, oh my God, like it's getting real. So now I'm kind of like nervous, like what's going to happen?
Amazing. No, that's great. What is February like in Chicago? Like the weather?
Cold. it didn't really start snowing till like the beginning of January, I want to say. So it's just trash from here on out.
Oh no. Well, I wish you warm days. And I'm really excited for that to come out. You're definitely going to promote it, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right. So we'll definitely help promote that, because that does sound like, you know, the meditations that the genre, the way that I hope that werewolves do change, even though reading more into, you know, like werewolf film history, I guess I could see like, I mean, first off, the list that I chose was very cherry picked. Like I said, there were like 500 films listed in this book. And I was like, well, this one seems interesting in this chapter, and this one seems interesting in this chapter. So I know that there is probably like a blaxploitation film on werewolves and whatnot. But this whole idea of the werewolf, well, I guess maybe actually before I get into it, what has been your perception of like what the werewolf is supposed to mean? Like, did you have any preconceived notion before?
About what the werewolf is supposed to be?
Or just like werewolves, like in horror, like why werewolves? Like what is it metaphorical for? Or did you, or like anything like that?
Honestly, not really. I just kind of saw it as like some, like, you know, monster, like beast type thing. And like, again, like I couldn't really even think of like anything notable, like growing up that I've seen like in film or media.
Totally.
Other than like, I don't know, like shitty stuff. Saga.
Oh my God. Yeah. No. I mean, more or less same, because what I was going to say is like, at best, what I was familiar with was the idea of the beast within. Right. And like, mm-hmm. what does that mean? Right. And so, the book that I was reading through, which is, I guess, the lens that helped me read some of these films, it was really interested in looking at the circumstances of transformation for each film, the effect on the individual because of their werewolf condition, how much humanity remains once they're transformed or going through it, and whether the werewolfism is like a blessing or a curse. And I think it's actually interesting in the films that we chose, which we'll go through them in a bit, how that sort of changes, especially when it kind of changes per gender, as well as per like historical era, so to speak. This idea of the beast within, which actually the idea of the beast within is rather recent. It comes from like 19th century literature, even though the idea of the werewolf myth has been around for like years and years and years and years. I mean, do you have any like werewolf myth, like from we're both Puerto Rican, which is awesome, but like, do you remember any stories like growing, like anything was told to you?
Specifically about werewolves? No. The closest thing would be like chupacabras.
But that's what I was going to say. I think I don't ever remember like seeing a drawn picture of a chupacabra, but every single time it was described to me, I was like, oh, so it's like a jungle werewolf.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if that's a bit, but yeah, so like different myths like that have existed, but the idea of like there lies this beast within really came from like 19th century literature. And so really, I guess like the question then to think about when we look at these films, or I think a good question to bring up is like, what is the beast without, like, what are the cultural circumstances of each of these films? And I think that that's an interesting question to look at, especially when one thing that I found somewhat surprising, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, is that like the mythology was pretty consistent, like throughout. I was like, oh, it's like, it's very like, there's a pentagram and it has to be mm-hmm. a full moon and all of these things.
Yeah. Especially like in the first two or three movies, it was just like damn near the same.
Yeah. It felt like a retread. So I guess we'll get into it. So the films that we looked at is pretty much the quintessential werewolf film, which is The Wolfman from 1941. Not the first werewolf film, but the first one of the first American werewolf films, and one of the iconic, the one that started like a five film legacy with The Wolfman and Lon Chaney, who was more attractive than I thought. I was like, oh, he's not, he's like, he's actually kind of cute, I guess. And then we also did I Was a Teenage Werewolf from 1957. We did The Werewolf of Washington from 1973, An American Werewolf in London, as you said, from 1980 something, mm-hmm. and Bad Moon from 1993 or 95, I think that was. And then two more recent entries with When Animals Die, or no, When Animals Dream, from 2014. That one is from Denmark. The rest of the films that we just mentioned are from America. And then we end on a Canadian film, actually, Bloodthirsty, from Canada. And also a bit of a queer film, I guess.
So I guess we
don't necessarily have to section it off. It would actually be interesting to just to sort of see where the conversation goes. But I guess one thing, and I'll reiterate this, is that I felt like there was such little experimentation with the trope oftentimes, and especially like where I would like to see werewolf films goes. Like, yeah, I want to see like black werewolf films. I want to see especially like, it's such a gendered trope, I feel. Like, there are definitely female werewolves, but I mean, like, why does it need to be a gender attached to it? You know, it's a creature in and of itself. Like, it doesn't really seem to abide by notions of what we perceive as like human social concepts of gender and whatnot. Yeah, what were some of your like maybe initial thoughts after you finished watching all of these films? Like, did you feel like you appreciated werewolves more, or?
It was just like, not that I was not excited for this, but it was just like, once I was done with the movies, it was like, okay, we're done.
same. I felt bad. I think I kept texting like, I'm sorry, I didn't realize these films were gonna be like this. I really like walked into this with an open mind, and even the early films, I was almost more excited for the early films. I was like, oh, these are going to be classic and whatnot. And I think in retrospect, the Wolfman is probably, I'm like, okay, but maybe because like the Wolfman is what's repeated in the rest of them.
Right.
So I guess we can first start talking about the Wolfman, which the Wolfman came out in 1941. So already it was very much like tied into this like wartime. It came out during the war. And that was very much the inspiration for the film in and of itself. It was written by this German Jew, actually. His name is Kurt Siebmak, and he fled. He had experienced some of the Holocaust, but then fled to America and wrote The Wolfman, which there's like I said, there's like five films of these. He dies at the end of the first one, but apparently in the sequel he's revived, and so on and so forth. So a lot of like wartime anxieties. It's also like a weird film that is like set in Europe, but the Europe is like very, it's like an amalgamation, and that like supposedly persists through the sequels. It's like this, oh, now we're in Germany, now we're in this. So like this idea of the war being a metaphor for werewolfism is very prevalent, and supposedly like Hitler was also a huge fan of wolves, so it's like this whole symbolic thing. But aside from that, like, what were some of your thoughts on the Wolfman?
So after watching The Wolfman, I just kind of felt like, you know, universal monster movie. This is kind of what I expected.
Okay, nice. Yeah. I almost wanted more drama. I was like, okay. It felt like it happened in like 3 hours. Like the whole movie happened in 3 hours, but it was told in 60 minutes.
Yeah, it was very short. Very short. And then even like the main character, what was his name? Larry. It was just like, dude, none of this would have happened if you weren't being such a fucking creep. Like, leave the girl alone.
Oh my God, yeah. And she was like, she didn't want to. And then we find out that she's like engaged. And then like, there's this whole slut shaming plot line where she's like, oh, why'd they step out together? Mm-hmm. Which was definitely interesting, I guess.
Yeah, and it was like at one point she said like, let's run away together, and but then like her fiance was back towards the end when like, you know, shit hit the fan.
Okay, one thing that I will say is I tried not to like read too deeply into a lot of these films. I'm like, okay, I really want to see what these films have to say at their forefront. And some of the films, like I would say I Was a Teenage Werewolf and The Werewolf of Washington, I'm like, oh, okay, I get what this is trying to say about this specific moment in time. But with The Wolfman, it felt very ambiguous, almost. Like after the fact, I could see a lot of the wartime connections. But overall, what I kept thinking about more so was knowing that the production code was in effect at this time, and knowing that they couldn't, because the Universal monster movies that I'm used to are actually the pre-code films. So I'm used to like The Invisible Man, where he like throws the baby off a bridge, and Freaks, and like and Dracula and Frankenstein, where again they throw a baby into a lake. A lot of baby killings in these movies. But this movie felt like, it almost felt like a romantic drama.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was all like about the perils of being a pervert.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it that way before too. But I was like, I mean, sure.
A lot of talking. Yeah, no, a lot of talking, a lot of flirting. Then of course we have the racist depiction of Bela Lugosi. Originally that's the werewolf, right? And bites him. But we do get, as you say, like a lot of the codes that repeat in the rest of these films, which like we have the pentagram, right? Mm-hmm. The full moon. One thing I was surprised with, especially because I guess since I was more used to Good Manners and Ginger Snaps, is that like none of these people remember their time as being a werewolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. That surprised me somewhat. I was like, oh, you just black out, I guess. Because in Ginger Snaps, that doesn't happen. She's very much aware
right.
of what she's doing. Yeah, totally. So, I mean, would you, well, I guess maybe this is an at large question, maybe first, like, do you think that you liked any of the films that we watched?
Let's see, because like I started off with The Wolfman, I was like, all right, cool. And then
it was like, okay.
After that, like, I'm gonna be honest, like, I was a teenage werewolf of Washington. Oh my God. I was just like,
oh my God, the horror scene killed me. I was like, what the fuck? It was so badly edited too. She's just like hitting against the wall. And I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah, it was like, I'm not gonna lie, it was a little hard to get through, but you know, like American Werewolf in London, I got there and I was like, all right, you know, this is, I think, considered, you know, a classic. I remember a story my mom telling me about like sneaking into the theater to go see it around the time it came out. And so I was like, gotta see it for myself. And then of course it's directed by John Landis and like Thriller.
Yeah.
That was like, once I got there, I was like, okay, like I'm really excited to watch this. And I think that may have been one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny. I really wanted to like an American Werewolf in London. And I gotta say, okay, one thing that I also want to say about these films, like The Wolfman, obviously we need to appreciate the amount of because that alone in and of itself, what we saw took like 8 hours back then. But I think one of the things that always takes me out about werewolf films is just that it looks so bad most of the time. But damn, I still think an American Werewolf in London, even compared to the recent ones that we saw after that, I was so impressed by the makeup in that film. Yeah. I'm not sure if I really liked the film itself. I think maybe it's just one of those things that you had to watch when you were young. I was just like, I don't really see the magic here. But the makeup was so cool. And almost not even the werewolf makeup, the zombie makeup was amazing.
Ooh, yeah. It was just wild because it was like, after that movie, I'm thinking, you know, all these other movies came out later. So we're going to get some really cool transformations because before watching American Werewolf, everything was just kind of like a time lapse.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. The Werewolf of Washington time lapse killed me. Yes. It looked cheaper than the one for the Wolfman. And I was like, damn. Okay.
That was definitely my least favorite movie of all of them on this list.
The interesting thing about The Werewolf of Washington is it was made during the Watergate investigations. Like it wasn't made at the end of it. It wasn't even like Nixon was still president when that movie came out and he resigned a year later. And I was like, that's probably the most interesting thing about the film. Otherwise, like the metaphor is so heavy-handed. I mean, granted, you know, it came out in an exploitation era where I think like films weren't supposed to have that much finesse, and you can tell. But yeah, it's definitely one of those things where it's like I like the idea of this a lot more than I like watching it.
Yeah, for sure. And I just felt like even like in that movie, like with the president, where it's like, oh, we see the pentagram, it's communists, or it was just
totally
like his racist ass like talking to the Panthers like, oh, it was them.
Oh my God, I know.
I was just like, this feels like too like, I just kept rolling my eyes. I was just like,
Yeah, no, totally. And then this is again where I even think about like criticism. That's why like this book, again, I majorly respect the work that this man did. But even like watching the films and then looking back on his interpretations, I'm like, this, the criticism or like the scholarship of werewolfism is just very through a very specific perspective. And I feel like it's not challenged in any way. Like, okay, yeah, this is a werewolf canon, but it's also so ignorant of so many other perspectives. And that's really what I felt with a lot of these films. It just felt so like I could predict by Bad Moon, like exactly how the plot was going to go. And it was just very nuclear family, very white, very just boring, to be frank.
Yeah. I did some research on that one, and apparently it was, or the movie was based on a book called Thor, which was written in the perspective of the dog.
Oh, that is, I now want to watch the, or read the book. I would love to read that book. Thor was the effing star of that
star film. Stole the show.
Oh my God. Then he's like thrown into the ceiling and everything's like okay with him. I'm just glad he survived, because there were like seven different parts of that movie where I'm like, great, you're going to kill off the best part of the film.
I really thought that dog was going to die.
Totally. So I guess to transition just a little bit, or to touch more deeply, you know, after The Wolfman, we did I Was a Teenage Werewolf from 1957, which like as soon as you like watch this movie, you're like, oh, OK, youth culture, 1950s, James Dean, delinquency, rock and roll. It's like it's very, very much on the nose. And it also stars a young Michael Landon, which fun fact. Well, first off, if you're not familiar with Michael Landon, he was the male lead in Little House on the Prairie. But for purposes that is more relevant for this podcast, he's the father of Christopher Landon, who's directed a bunch of movies that we like Paranormal Activity, the Marked Ones, and Freaky, and Happy Death Day. So technically a horror icon there. So yeah, what did you think about I Was a Teenage Werewolf?
Yeah, so I Was a Teenage Werewolf. Like you said, this came out around the time where it's like 50s, James Dean era. So watching it at the beginning, I was thinking, all right, so they're trying to do like this James thing type thing, but make it like...
Totally.
I guess, you know?
Yeah.
But I will say, I was expecting like, how the main character like turns to be totally different, like this idea about him like going to this doctor.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure what he like what even would you call like what was going on there, like some sort of therapy or something he was getting of like medication.
Yeah. This movie seemed like the poster child of fuck therapy, fuck psychiatrists. But like the really interesting thing about this movie is I felt like I didn't know what it was trying to demonize other than like everything.
Yeah.
Everything seemed at fault, because it seemed like his fault, like entirely, just because his friends weren't turning into werewolves. We don't get like we never understand why he becomes a werewolf, right? Like it's like he's a werewolf.
He started turning like after like his appointments with the doctor. So he was taking
sort
of like some doses of like
exactly.
some injection. And then it was like the more he kept going back, like the more he started to turn. And there was like this weird like monologue where the doctor was talking about like, we need to go back to how it was like at the beginning of the time. I'm like, monkeys, what are you talking about?
And I think that was like, for me, the confusing part, because it just like, obviously I got this like anti-science bent, or like it can't be fixed with science or whatever. But I was like, okay, but like, where did it come from? Because like he was a delinquent before that, and that's why they chose him. But like what I very nebulous. But I mean, I guess definitely it would definitely, as you said, it felt like someone was in a boardroom and was like, you know, James Dean, but Michael Landon, and werewolf, but no therapy. And that's it.
Yeah, it was really hard to like, honestly follow like, what was going on. Like, I understood what was happening, but it was just like, what was the point. Like, what are you trying to say?
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, this is definitely a film where I could be like, okay, I can see like that the point was make a werewolf film that appeals to rock and roll culture, because that's just truly, you know, like this is the 1950s was the decade where we see for the first time that teenagers have disposable income. Teenagers are shaping culture. And I can definitely see how this film is a product of that. And actually this would be the last American werewolf film until the early 70s. So there was like this big pause between American werewolf films. But it was really, it was like a big hit at the time. Like it would do, it did its rounds on like, well, a big hit in the sense that it did like its rounds on B-horror film circuits. And I mean, I just feel like a large reason because of that. And I guess it goes back to the question that I wanted to investigate. Is like, instead of it being the beast within, which I definitely feel like the Wolfman establishes that. I mean, obviously the Wolfman's like the peak film. This one definitely feels like, okay, this is a beast without thing where it's like, it couldn't have been made any time except 1957. But the messaging is still just like very, very weird, especially in a modern age.
If I think of anything, I'll let you know. But like, I don't know what was the message to that at all.
Yeah, other than it needed to be a cheap teen movie, which then like leads into almost like The Werewolf of Washington. It's almost like these two films seen together, both are very incomplete and both obviously belong to like this subpar B horror economy. But like the thing with I Was a Teenage Werewolf is I felt like the coding was, I guess, very fluent or fluid. And then The Werewolf of Washington just felt like this adaptation that could never fully reach the heights of the absurdity it was trying to embody, because it was just so a lot of screaming in both of these movies.
A lot.
Like, oh my God, I don't think I've ever heard, like, it just felt like each of the lead actors was just like yelling all the time at everyone. Like, I'm a monster, leave me alone.
But that's like one of the things that happens to werewolves or people turning into werewolves, right? They start acting like, you know, is feral the right word? You know,
no,
they
yeah,
like, totally. Present it a lot of people like as like having anger issues.
Yeah, actually. Goofy. Yeah, yeah. That actually brings about an American Werewolf in London in an interesting way, because then we get to an American Werewolf in London. Werewolves are having a bit of a comeback. And this oftentimes is considered like the werewolf film, right? As mm-hmm. we said. But when we actually read the film, which is where I had my issues with it, it's sort of like, okay, so he would rather be psychotic than be a werewolf, or I don't like what are we supposed to read here? Were you able to, like, how did you receive an American Werewolf in London?
So when I was watching this one, I think it had like a bit more like comedic elements than I was expecting. But I guess, I mean, John Landis is like, you know, coming to America and all that. So I guess it makes sense. And like,
actually, to pause right there really briefly, he even said that he wrote the script in 1969, but couldn't find funding until the early 80s because people thought it was either too scary to be funny or too funny to be scary.
Is that because, like, because his name is on it?
Or? It was just the script in and of itself. Like, he could have, like, yeah, because he was just shopping around the script and they were like, well, is this a comedy or horror? And he's like, I mean, isn't it both? And they were like, but it's too, and then that's where he gave the line. And I was like, okay. I mean, I could see it for back then, mm-hmm. for sure. But I think, as you said, maybe I think this is one of the more successful films because of that embracing of comedy, because yeah. the rest of these films sort of end up being unintentional comedies, especially actually the last two. I was more surprised. I was like, I think these are supposed to be more serious, but I almost feel like they're worse than the other ones. But we'll get there. Yeah, but in An American Werewolf in London, if we actually try to read the metaphor through and the reactions to the metaphor and how he handles them, it's also the first film where it follows a bit of the lore in the beginning, where they're at the pub, They see the pentagram. They're like, oh, full moon, blah, blah, blah. But what happens instead is that his victims haunt him. And I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was probably the most interesting part for me personally while watching.
Same. Yeah, yeah.
Because I was like, obviously, if this happened in real life, yeah, that's scary as shit. But like, even like in the scenes where his friend's coming back and he's talking to his corpse, I'm like, the friend's funny as hell. Like, damn, yeah. He's the show. Like,
give him a movie. Yeah, actually, I love that actor. The actor is in Martin Scorsese's After Hours, which is one of my favorite movies. And I didn't know who turned. And when it was the other dude that turned, I was like, oh, fuck. I wanted the other guy to be the werewolf.
Yeah. Like, that was, like, yeah, hands down, just the best part. And then the way he was just, like, decaying throughout the movie, I was just like, this is so cool.
Yeah, yeah. Again, this is where I feel like the werewolf is the least interesting part of this film.
No, for real. I think the most interesting werewolf part or aspect of the movie would be the scene where he turns for the first time.
Oh, yeah, which is, like, the iconic scene.
Yeah, and it was like long and like drawn out. So like I was watching it and I'm like, this is obviously fake, but I'm watching it thinking like, damn, that looks kind of painful. And they did like a great job with that. But as like, other than that, like it didn't really feel like a werewolf movie. And it was just like random. Like he's living at the house with the nurse he met at the hospital.
Which let's talk about that though. Actually, I now that you mentioned that, I was like, because then this whole thing, the thing that begins to be introduced here, and I'm sure that it was introduced in other films, but for me, it began like in the eight for this film, and then it sort of echoed in Bad Moon, is the fact that, oh, you need to be killed by someone that you love. And he has a nurse. And what I know that he's in the hospital for 3 weeks, but by the time he wakes up and by the time that he moves into her apartment, which, again, I feel like only a man could have written this. She's like, yeah, you know, just stay with me. And then that's like a week, maybe. I feel like it's shorter. And then he says, I love you on like the second day. And then on like the third day, she says she loves him. And I'm like, girl. What?
It was weird. It was very weird. I'm like, this would never happen in real life. Or if it was just like someone who's not a man writing this script, like that just wouldn't be.
Period. 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 I'm also, have you ever seen Hitchcock's The Birds?
I have, yeah.
Okay. Oh my God. So it's been a while since I've seen it. I'm rewatching it now for something. And I don't know if you remember, but the whole premise of that movie is like this dude walks into the bird shop because the woman like broke his window once. Of course, it's crazy coincidence, right? Mm-hmm. And she manages to track his information, and they're like, and she brings him birds, but he's gone for the weekend. He's gone 60 miles up to the coast for the weekend, and she's like, okay, I'll drive 60 miles to deliver these birds to him, to someone. And I'm like, only a man, no woman back then would drive 60 miles for someone that had like this antagonistic, like he was rude to her. Anyway, but that's how I felt with American Werewolf in London too. I was just like, which is why it became like, I feel like more than any of the other films, like you said, I felt like a very sure way about each of them. But American Werewolf in London is just like very complicated because there are so many scenes that I really liked, most particularly like the decaying scenes. The scenes between this friendship is also kind of like really beautiful. And then that's ripped away. And I don't feel like the film can stand on the main dude's performance on its own. And then with these other romantic elements around him, it just like, it did not work for me at all.
I was like, why is there like a 5-minute sex scene going on?
Oh my God, so awful. So awful. Yeah, no, totally. But yeah, I guess like, I mean, one thing that I do know as like background information is that John Landis says that he got the idea of the script watching sacred funeral rites when he was in Europe. And he was, I think he said Yugoslavia, and he thought that it was just absurd. Like, what would happen if someone that's rational and American, like him, of course, had to go through this, you know, superstitious transformation? And I was like, okay. All right, John Landis. I'm not sure if the film answers that at any point.
I don't think so, or at least I don't see it, you know.
Right.
Like a man to explain it to me.
We need John Landis. Oh, actually, Max Landis, his rapist son, was supposed. Max Landis, yeah, he's legit. Like, he got this whole profile up, written up on all of his sex crimes. But he was supposed to do a remake of it, but then the profile came out and it was nixed. But I just, again, this is one of those films where I really wanted to like it. I was like, okay, it can be even a little bit racist. Like I'll take this much 80s racism. It's like when I watch Gremlins, I'm like, okay, it's going to be a little bit racist, but Gremlins is pretty okay otherwise. But it was just like one of these things where it was just, as you said, just cherry picking these moments. But otherwise, like, I feel like he knew he was, because I mean, there's even that interesting the interesting plot development that, like, everyone is telling him what he has to do, and he knows it but doesn't want to do it, but he would rather be committed, or like he would rather be in jail.
I don't think he even knew what he wanted.
Totally. Yeah.
I really don't think so. Because even though it was like, you said it was like, in order for a werewolf to like fully die, like someone they love has to kill them.
Which I hate this, by the way. Someone they love has to kill. This is the worst development of this trope. I don't like it at all.
I think that's like weird. Like, I don't understand like the explanation or the thought process behind that. But even before the end of the movie, his dead friend's talking about, you have to kill yourself.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, it was just kind of like confusing,
like, take responsibility, I guess, like you know, take responsibility for what happened. But but I guess that's also like another problem that I have with werewolf movies. They seem very victim blamey.
Yeah.
And again, this is like not something that I realized. I didn't realize that they always have to die. I guess I was brainwashed by Harry Potter, where I'm like, oh no, they just go away to the screaming shack for a week. You don't have to die, but like in all of these, it's like, no, it's imperative that you die. Let me kill you in the
definitely
most graphic way possible.
Like all these, well, not all of them, but like the first few, like up until American Werewolf, like they all end in tragedy. Like they all just end up dying. Like, yeah, this is the only way to go.
Yeah. Well, but you know, you know, whenever we think about films in the 80s, especially because I'm a huge 80s, like I would watch any film from the 80s and probably like it, which is why I'm so angry I didn't love An American Werewolf in London. I was like, I mean, I should have known, because John Landis is literally a murderer, but I even liked the film that he murdered in. You know that, right?
I don't know anything about John Landis.
Oh, okay.
I just knew he directed Coming to America and Blues Brothers, and that was it.
Oh, no. What happened is there's a segment, and I think it was actually cut out of the film, and John Landis was directing the segment, and it had to do with, like, war. And there was a helicopter that had to transport a couple of children actors to, it was like a shot, like a helicopter shot or whatever, on an island. John Landis was already over the child labor laws. Actually, child labor laws changed in Hollywood because of this incident. It was like the 14th hour. Everyone was really tired. The helicopter had been having technical issues all day. And on one take, it crashed and it decapitated all the children. And John Landis never, like he has like infamously been like, oh, it's not my fault, you know, like there should have been more, like, yeah, and it was a real big douchebag about it.
The law has changed because of you. What do you mean?
I'm so sorry, but no, I'm not sorry. But yeah, so An American Werewolf in London, and John Landis, complicated, very, very complicated. But actually, one thing that sort of begin, even though I wouldn't say it begins with American Werewolf in London, but I think it becomes more pronounced, particularly because, you know, the 80s, this like hyper masculine, like, oh, I'm becoming the beast within sort of thing. But it really gets like picked up with Bad Moon. Bad Moon was like, I wouldn't say it was good, but it was like one of these things where I was like, I think this movie is slightly misinterested, and I think I like it for that.
No, this one was definitely interesting. Like, I don't know. It's not, like you said, not necessarily good. I think what really got me was the element with the dog. I watched some of these movies actually with my partner, and they were saying just like the, you know, animal psychology aspect.
For real. It made me want to watch. I mean, I will say this. this is you're gonna laugh at me, but for all these films, I was like, does the dog die this? But I was like, I mean, I guess the werewolf does die, so like it doesn't mean anything. But this was the one film where I was like really anxious. I was like, this dog better not die. It's a good, and he's protecting the family. He's protecting this crazy mom and her child. Also, MVP to the child, who was like, why are you calling animal control on like our dog that was clearly, you know, like our uncle is weird. Your brother is weird. He's in an Airstream and doesn't like talk with us really or hang out. Like, weirdness.
You know, the mom's dumb as hell. Like,
oh my god, I know.
Like, in like what world? Like, I do understand, like, dogs are like, you know, very strong. But I don't know, if you see like people getting ripped up like that, like, I don't think it would be like my dog who lives with me in my house. I don't know. That just seems like
This is another one where I'm like, maybe written, I mean, it was definitely directed and written by a man, but I was like, the characterization is a little weird, because we get this like badass opening scene with a Flopsy, which, by the way, I forgot that was like a thing until I was like, all right, Flopsies. And clearly that was just a scene to establish her as like this matriarch, right? Which I think it did that successfully. But then she's like completely oblivious to this to her brother's very deep weirdness. Which her brother is just like a scumbag even from the beginning. We actually open up with the transformation scene where which, by the way, actually, sorry, I know my mind's going off in all cylinders right now, but this film, I was like, oh, this seems like a family film, like when I saw the cover. And then it opens with like this really explicit sex scene.
Very. This is like
titties everywhere. Yeah,
I don't get it. It's just like, I think, I don't know, in my opinion, I don't think it's like a sex scene is ever going to be really that necessary.
And I am of that opinion too. And it's weird because like in a lot of the film culture circles that I run in, there's been like this, especially from women, being like, oh no, we need good sex on screen. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, I'm never going to be the person that's like, I will say I have seen well done sex scenes, but I don't ever like, I'm watching a movie and I'm like, oh yeah, ready for the sex. Actually, that's a big issue that I had with the Fear Street trilogy. I know everyone and their mother love that, especially, you know, the lesbians. And obviously I have to represent with the lesbians, but I was like, you crazy lesbians are crazy. I don't want to see teenage sex scenes. I'm sorry. They look 12. It's weird.
It's pervy. It's just like, let's just call it what it is. It feels like near child porn. And I was on a whole rant about it the other night, specifically about like Euphoria. And I'm just like,
I was gonna say Euphoria. Yeah, that's why, like, Euphoria. I'm like, I mean, I know that they're older, but they don't, I mean, like, they're not supposed to be older. There's actually this clip going around now. And again, it's probably because I follow all of the lesbian accounts on Instagram, but it's the one with Alexa Demi and like with her much older boss, and she, and it's a woman, and she's unzipping her dress and the lesbians are like, yes. And I'm like, isn't she supposed to be 16? It's weird.
Weird. Someone said, I think it was like on TikTok, they were like, I feel like this time and this show is revealing more about y'all than y'all think it is.
It's a lot, though. I mean, this could turn into a Euphoria rant. And like, I really try to be understanding. I'm like, I know that I'm not, you know, I'm not Gen Z, you know, I'm not. And even like certain cultural trends for the youth, I understand so much more than any of the cultural trends that I always forget. How old are you, Jess?
I'm 23.
Oh, okay. So there are some cultural trends that I went through, like say 10 years ago when I was your age, that I just never connected with, that I connect more with like Gen Z on and things like that. But Euphoria is just one of these things where I'm like, I mean, it's written by white men. It's produced by like, you know, fucking Drake, who already has like this very like complicated history of being creepy with underage girls. Yeah. And the future.
Yeah.
Oh my God. No. Yeah. And it's just like, I, y'all don't realize, like, sure. Yeah. There's representation with people like, you know, like Barbara Ferreira and Hunter Schaefer and that shit's cool. But y'all don't realize that like that this is pink capitalism. Like this is where it goes to. You know, like it, you're not being empowered through these representations. These are exploitative. And I even heard a rumor, and again, this is just something that I saw in passing, so I do not say that this is true, but I heard a rumor that Barbie Ferreira actually got into it with the creators over where her character is going. And so she decided like not to promote the show or something. And I'm like, that's the shit that you need to pay attention to, though, because yeah, fuck the writers, fuck the creators. If anything, we need to pay attention to the situations that actors feel like they're put in. And it's clear that there's already discomfort with a lot of these actors and the things that they do.
No, for real. And I don't even think there's a writer's room. I'm pretty sure the creator is the only dude writing it. So
shut the fuck up. I didn't know that, really.
Yeah. So it's like a middle-aged white man.
Oh my God.
I remember a few years ago, there was a movie that came out called Assassination Nation.
Oh yeah, that motherfucker. Yeah,
did he do that? It's the same director and he wrote that too. So yeah. I'm like, this is a pattern.
Yeah, no. It's very weird. Yeah. I'm so glad that you said that. Anyway, so, I guess going back to Bad Moon. Yeah, that titty scene just like, and shit, I love titties, but that was not like, it was just not there. And also like, again, we set up the fact that American Werewolf in London, makeup badass. Oh my God, the makeup in this film. I think I would rather have the Werewolf of Washington because at least that was like somewhat funny. But like this one was like, it was so bizarre.
It was like one of those movies where it's like, it's bad, but it's not like bad enough, or not, should I say that? Like it's bad. It's not like funny bad.
It's just like, it looks cheap and it looks like, and clearly they wanted to focus. There's so much focus on like wolf heads and attacks. And again, I'm like, this, either the reaction isn't severe enough or this doesn't look as like, again, they throw the dog into the ceiling and then the dog's okay. And I'm like, make it make sense. Like what's good here? So that was like one thing that already threw me off, because then actually though, yo, if you take out that opening scene, the rest of the film does play like a family film.
No, like, no.
And I'm like, how did they market this film? I really want to know.
Yeah, I'm going to probably start doing that from now on. Just like look up trailers after the fact.
Oh yeah. Sometimes that's really funny. Yeah. And the person that directed it and wrote the screenplay as well, Eric Red. Yeah. But yeah, as you said, this was a film where like, it made me want more dogs and werewolf movies, but not if they're going to die.
Right. And it would make sense if there's werewolf movies for it to be more like, you know, centered around dogs, like, because like the past movies, like I Was a Teenage Werewolf, there were scenes where it's like the dog knows that a person's a werewolf because, you know, they start barking at the person. But that's really as far as it really went. And I kind of like what I appreciate about Bad Moon was like this aspect about like seeing stuff through the perspective of the dog. And I was just like, that just feels like it makes sense. Like, why is there not more of that in like the werewolf Or subgenre.
No, this is really good. No, yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, so like Bad Moon, but one thing that I will say about Bad Moon that I will give it is it did feel like low-key the problem was men. Did you feel that? Like men and their impulses? Like it felt like he was being punished for being, you know, having affairs and being a shithead. And I do think like if I was the mom, I would have had pause a lot sooner. But yeah. I was very relieved that there was like no but he's my brother sort of towards the end. It was very much like a fuck you dude. And again, the little kid and the dog just steal the show. The dog that has 9 lives that could like literally jumped out of or got thrown out of a 2-floor window and was like, I'm gonna go chase this motherfucker through the woods after the fact.
The only two characters with sense.
Yeah, no, totally.
So, I also noticed, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go.
I also noticed in Bad Moon that it was kind of like, what was his Uncle Ted? Like at first he's like at the beginning, like, oh, like this is terrible. I need to like stay away from people. And
oh, right.
But then like later on, like he's like leading more into like the like primal things, I guess, where like then he marks his territory on the doghouse. I was like, what the?
Yeah, no, totally. But no, that's a really great point that at first he's like, seems like he wants to be responsible with it. But at the same time, like, the whole reason why he got attacked was because he was having like an affair or whatever. So like, he's clearly a pig or whatever the fuck, or a werewolf, whatever. But then like his resolution is no, let me go to my sister, even though he says that it was because of family love. So this is where we get the idea of like, oh, family love is going to cure me, which again, where did this come from? Where did this love cures werewolves? Like it's not a thing.
Yeah, like from the like also like from some of the research I've been like trying to do about werewolves, like I have not read anything like that, so yeah. I don't know how like is that like a legit thing that's like in werewolf
I gotta say no, and honestly, and in the book it's not really like mentioned, like when Bad Moon is mentioned, when American Werewolf in London is mentioned, it's all about the masculinity, which I can see. But and then again, this is like where I say, like, I watch these movies now and I'm like, why aren't we talking about this really random offshoot into love is going to save us all? Because I feel like that has something to do with it, too.
Yeah. And like, I'm all for like, you know, people, you know, making up their own thing and like expanding on the world and whatnot. But I just think the power of love is a little corny.
I mean, and it's also just like, I don't. It's never seen through, and it seems like such, I mean, if anything, it feels like the power of love is then cheapened by having it as being like such like this narrative thing, especially in like an American Werewolf in London with these 24-hour one night stands that turn into love. Like, I'm sorry, it's not happening. So I guess to like begin to circle up and I guess wrap up, let's talk about our lady werewolves. Now, I will say this. There had definitely been lady werewolves in the eras that we spoke about. Especially lady werewolves tend to be coded with like lesbianism and things like that. But I feel like it's not until the 21st century that we actually get feminist versions of this, which we watched When Animals Dream, which is from Denmark, and we watched Bloodthirsty, which is from Canada. And I gotta say, I didn't like either of these films. I probably hated Bloodthirsty the most. Like, I think I would rather watch Werewolf of Washington than Bloodthirsty ever again. Mainly because, holy shit, the music in Bloodthirsty is so awful. But but I will say that it did feel like these last two films were feminist takes, even though When Animals Dream was written by a man, it definitely did feel like a feminist reclamation of the myth. So what did you think of these two films? Like, did you feel like an awe moment, or were you like let down?
A little let down. Like, I'm thinking, I don't know, not that because it's more recent films that they're necessarily going to be good, but... It was just like, okay, well, these are like, you know, small, like, indie looking movies, the main characters are women, like, maybe yeah. I'm gonna see like a different direction that's being taken that I'm gonna like more than everything else. And I didn't get that
at all,
especially like when I was watching When Animals Dream. Like, I was like kind of thinking of, it feels like a bad version of kind of like Let the Right One In, but they added
for real. Yeah. I mean, like, the only thing that I thought was interesting, and I wish would have actually been explored more with When Animals Dream, which, by the way, and When Animals Dream, we're not ever explicitly, like, it's never explicitly said it's a werewolf, right?
No.
And so, like, but obviously it is a werewolf and whatnot, but, like, the werewolf gene is genetic. There's actually seems to be like this archaic mother, monstrous feminine, like the abjection is passed on through your mother thing, which I was like, okay, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there does seem to be like this tension of men trying to control the condition, and, you know, the mother eventually dies, and that's what sort of sets everything off for this woman. And so far in the films that we've seen, I would say that werewolfism is viewed as like a disease. And this is sort of like the first film where it's like, no, it's a reclamation. She doesn't need to die. But all that being said, as you said, it did not feel like more interesting ground was covered otherwise. Like, yeah, the traits changed, the lore changed a little bit, but it still felt like so boring.
Yeah. Almost.
And not even because it's a slow burn, but it's like, this is really the most interesting way that you could tell the story. Like, you have this female geneticism that you're bringing forth, and you're only obsessed with the sexuality of this woman.
Right.
I don't know. It felt like off for me. Yeah. And same sort of like with Bloodthirsty. And I really wanted to like Bloodthirsty. I was like, oh, she's gay. Oh, I low-key kind of like this idea of the music industry as like a creature, whatnot. But again, the sexuality of it just seemed like so weird and like completely like superficial.
Yeah, I almost felt like with Bloodthirsty too. What was his name? The producer that she was.
Oh my god! With. I know.
Throughout it, I was like, it feels like this weird thing where I'm like, he's going to like assault her or something, or some bad shit's gonna happen. But then it was like, then she started talking about like, oh, I'm an orphan. I'm like, that's your dad, ain't it? And I totally called it. But like, even throughout that movie, it felt really weird. Like, he was looking at like, just, he was giving Predator, very much so. And like, I was very much on edge the whole time, because I really thought he was gonna hurt her or something.
Yeah. And it's also Bloodthirsty, I'm just so mad at it. Especially because this is the only one directed by a woman. And obviously we know that it's not like queer authors, woman authors, non-binary authors. We're all human. We all don't automatically make great shit and poop it out, right? So it's not like I necessarily expected this one to be the best one, but I guess I did expect more responsibility with the story. And as you said, it's like, I thought that the metaphor was going to be very specific, sort of like about this industry. And also, if she's a pop star, this is the most budget ass pop star I've ever. I was like, I hate, as someone that like genuinely likes pop music, I always hate when there are like faux pop narratives that don't go for it. Like, you're in a movie and you want a pop star, make her larger than life. That's what pop stars do. Otherwise, you're just like making this coffee singer songwriter movie and being like, yeah, she's a pop star though.
Yeah, like, no disrespect or shade to the actress, but I did think that. I was like, okay, she's supposed to be an artist, but you don't look like one.
I'm sorry, but like, casting is casting. And then I know Canada is a bit like more liberal or whatever, so to speak, than America, but it also was just like this weird thing where there were like so many caveats to her personality that I was like, wait, she's a pop star, but she's like a lesbian, and that's like an afterthought. Like, obviously, like, that in a perfect world, that would be the afterthought. But in the film world and in reality, it's not the afterthought. And then like, it also felt like so throw. I mean, and eventually what I feel like the film is actually more interested in exploring is like female rage and things like that. And of course, that's definitely like valid, so to speak. But I also think it was the least interesting place that the story could have gone. You have all these other things, like her girlfriend was disposable. It was more like she was almost like becoming the person that she wanted her dad, but that her dad wanted her to be. And I'm just like, that is the last place I wanted this to end.
Yeah. I don't know. It felt like there was a lot there that like could have been really great when you're writing the script. Like I really liked the backdrop of like, the backdrop of like, you know, her being like this pop star and the music industry. And you know, what the music industry is known as, like, you know, just like this very like weird, shady, evil ass like industry. And so I was like, you could have like done a critique about that through like this werewolf lore and then also explore like her queerness.
Yes, exactly. That's what I wanted out of this movie. I was like, I want a takedown of the music industry because clearly the werewolf metaphor is supposed to be preying on, you know, the vulnerability of young female artists, especially. And then, but the fact that she's queer is going to be explored through this relationship and perhaps this really, this is like the one movie where I was like, okay, I could see how like love could be like the saving grace here, but it really was just like, no, she's gonna become a monster. She's gonna become a product of the industry. And it's like, girl, you just told the most boring heterosexist version of the story. Like if I didn't know that you were a woman, I would say a man directed this. And I'm pretty sure the director also isn't queer. And I'm like, it shows.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, oh, like I'm not queer, but like, you know, representation. So I just wanted to add it to
y'all for real. Like, drives me crazy, especially like I want to say like post 2015 of like just these queer characters being littered throughout horror. And I'm like, okay, but it's clear that a queer person didn't like, or even sometimes it is queer authors, or you know, I can't think of an example of a queer author doing this now, so I'm not going to drag them into this, but it's so often like, oh yeah, and she's gay. I especially feel this, you know what I feel this with? I feel like they're, and this is actually I feel like more of a Canada trend of these survivalist lesbian couple films. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but there have been a couple that I've seen over the last like 5 years or so where it's like, yeah, it's a survivalist lesbian couple, but one of them wants to kill the other one and they're in the woods. But it feels just so straight. It feels so straight the entire time. I'm like, it's clear that you wrote this with a man and woman. Then you're like, no, I'm going to make it two women. Aren't I subversive? And it's like, no, not really, because I could like clearly tell which one was supposed to be the man and which one was supposed to be the woman.
It's like with not even just like horror movies, just movies in general. I'm like, why do y'all like to see lesbians in pain all the time? I promise you could be happy.
I know, it's so boring. It's so I've been prepping actually literally all day for the talk I'm gonna be giving in Berlin on queer horror. And it's and like one thing that I say is that it's like, let's actually embrace the word queer though. Like queer does not mean like woman, man, you know, especially when we talk about queer horror, it's especially very homonormative in the sense that it's like straight. It is cisgender, gay men for the most part. And then maybe what I see more often is like woman stuff. And it's like, yo, but queer means so many things. You know, it's not a binary, right? And queer in and of itself means a transgression. Like that's what that word means. So like, why do we have to repeat the same stories that have been told over and over, which is what Bloodthirsty feels like, except, I'm going to gender swap it. Mm-hmm. I can tell when shit is gender swapped. It's not queer. It's just, you're repeating the same quotes. You're just changing the personality or whatever the fuck. And that's what just these two films felt like for me. Like, okay, I could see how they're more feminist, obviously. But at the end of the day, I actually don't feel like they're more feminist. I feel like it retreads ground. And even a film like Good Manners, which I do like Good Manners, but there comes a point, I think like three quarters through the film, as it begins to shift into the woman raising the son, where I'm like, this just got so heterosexist and so racist too. Like yeah. The film feels like it's challenging these colonial notions in Brazil of, and, you know, the agency of the Black woman in that film. But then towards the end, it's like, no, I gotta raise my white werewolf ex-girlfriend son or whatever the fuck. And it's like, it takes a nosedive. Like I get so bored.
Yeah.
Damn, I'm sorry, I went off.
I've only watched Good Manners like one time, and I liked it, but I don't know. I was just like, oh, this feels different. And then she started like raising the son, and I don't know, something about it after like could never really keep my finger on it. It was just kind of like, all right.
It's no, and again, it's like it repeats, especially like and I'm actually writing a chapter now a little bit on Good Manners, and it really is just this thing where it's like it's challenging racial politics up until the point that, oh, okay, so she's assimilating for the son. And it's like, no, I want this to be an Afrofeminist film. You know, it should have been an Afrofeminist film. Like, why do we need to, again, prioritize the whiteness in this narrative again?
Was the director or writer, were any of them like white? Afro? Oh, okay.
No. Yeah. And not straight as well. First off, I just want to say thank you so much for making me go on this thought experiment, because I literally never would want to necessarily go through it, but it was really exciting when you came to me and you were like, yeah, maybe werewolves. And I was like, fuck it, why not werewolves, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like I can be a bit more of an educated hater now. No, I'm kidding. it makes me just want more for the genre, you know.
No, same. I think because, you know, when we talk about like monster movies or like horrors, I feel like the focus is always on like vampires or witches. I mean, they're both cool, but there's other like mythical like creatures and monsters that like totally. We can, you know, explore that I don't think we've explored enough. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, vampires, witches, cool. Like you could continue to like explore that world, but I'm like, there's so much other things that we can do that I feel like we haven't seen.
I know that you're really excited for Manny, and I just saw it yesterday, and it was one of those it was exactly what I wanted it to be and what I expected it to be, but it also just made me realize like people don't understand that horror pretty much hasn't been like scratched, because there's so many unique voices and so many unique lores globally, mm-hmm. that just because film economies and things like that just don't get their shine. And what I always hope more for Western filmmakers, because like it or not, you know, we have like the privilege of being, or you know, the privilege of being in America and whatnot, trying to survive as we do with our identities in America, is to like really embrace our voices and our cultures and our blend, because that is a beautiful blend that we have, especially as third culture kids, which I definitely identify as a third culture kid, being raised half in Puerto Rico and half over here. And Nikki Yatu, definitely we spoke about that on the pod when she came on, and you could just see it in Nanny. It's just so beautiful. And I guess that's just what I also want to hope for other filmmakers as well, is like, even if you're not like, you don't have to necessarily be like this, like it's fine if you're straight and white or whatever the fuck, but like actually embrace the difference around you, then like why repeat the same shit? Like these, that's one thing that I really saw throughout these films, is like so much repetition that when they think that they're doing something different, they're really not. And it's just like, just take the time and really see through like what happens if you could get cured of werewolfism, or what happens if you actually went in a queer direction with this.
I'm gonna keep it a buck though. Like I just don't think those people like have the imagination or the range to write those types of films. I mean, if you're
even
like a binary, like you're probably gonna think like that more or less. So
no,
maybe a little bit of a hot take for some, but I mean,
no, it's not a hot take at all. No, it's not. No, that's literally what I say though. Not to keep talking about my talk, but it's like I think especially like non-queer, non-queer and hegemonic authors, like, you know, straight, cisgender filmmakers, they need to collaborate with, you know, like, and actually collaborate with folks, not be like, okay, I'm casting you. Be like, no, take a look at my script. You know, what do you feel about your character? Because that's the only way that movies go in different places. Otherwise, it's just, you know, as we said, like plucking people in, putting in whoever fits under that identity, and then being like, okay, play the same roles, but now we're hip now. That's just pink capitalism. It's just capitalism and neoliberalism, especially, which I hate seeing in films. And I feel like especially the crop of film, I really feel like werewolves overall, it's such like a neoliberal trope. I feel that way about zombies too, for the most part as well. Like zombies just feel like a very conservative neoliberal trope. And rarely do I feel like people actually push the boundaries of, you know, the lore of these things. You can change the lore, you can be experimental with it, but when you just repeat the same shit, it's like, okay, you're pretty much doing the same things that's been done over and over. Yeah. Horror is supposed to be the transgressive cinema, right? So actually transgress boundaries. Once boundaries have been set and you're not pushing them, you're just doing the same shit over and over.
So. No, for real. And I understand, like, you know, going back to like lore for reference and whatnot, but like at the same time, like it's still lore is not necessarily factual.
Exactly. Fuck. It's fiction, man. It's yeah, no, you know, and it almost goes like both ways, because I feel like one problem that I have now also is that people realize, oh, we can make the social justice horror. And it's like, yeah, but the only war, I personally hate films where I'm like, oh, okay, see, the monster is racism, I get it, where it's just like it's so obvious. Where it's like, no, embrace genre, embrace symbolism, like so much excitement can happen with that. And also like even pushing the series that you're talking about, it seems like it's being very playful with genre in and of itself, like this could be a comedy but with genre tools. And I think that that's super exciting. Like use these tools of genre. That's why they're there. Like, you don't have to tell this, like, you can have all these things happening at once, just as long as it's authentic to whatever you want to say and whatever realities that exist both with all of your collaborators. Film isn't made by one person in a vacuum, right? And I feel like people just truly need to embrace more collaboration to really get you know, things off the ground. So your final thoughts on these, like what, how do you feel about werewolves now?
I feel like, you know, I definitely know a lot more about werewolves than I did before this. But I'm gonna be honest, I don't think I could really pick any of these movies and say that I necessarily liked them.
Same.
I think there's stuff within each movie that I liked. Like, I would like to see, like, hopefully in the future, if people explore werewolves more, I would like to see more stuff about, like, the animal psychology aspect that we saw within, like, Bad Moon.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. The transformation scene in American Werewolf, iconic. I would like to see people play around more with, like, you know, special effects, makeup and all that, because, like, I was like, that was almost 40 years ago and that was still the best.
It's hands down. Yeah. And actually, that's also something I wanted to mention, like, there, it seems especially now it's so CGI heavy, and it's like, yo, like, you can play around with what werewolves could look like. Like, this is a really bad example, especially because I wasn't the biggest fan of the movie, but the new VHS had this segment on a creature called Ratma. Oh my god, I know I posted the picture on my Instagram, but it's clear that it was a costume created for the film, and so it's all like practical effects, and I'm like, y'all can make really cool practical effects still. Like, you don't have to be giving everyone green eyes, you know, I mean, it's fine if that's what you want to do, but like, shit, you can really be creative with creature design, even playing around with both practical and CGI.
And like, you don't really have to rely on the CGI too much either.
You
like,
don't.
You can, like, use a little here and there to like tweak
things. American Werewolf in London is entirely, entirely practical.
That's impressive.
So yeah, no, that's also something that I just don't really understand about werewolf films. Like, why do they all more or less look the same? Like, no, not even all wolves look the same, you know?
Yeah. So technically there's like 5 different forms of werewolves too. Had asked my friend, and he said there's like 5 different types. It was like one called feral human. I think I have it over here. Yeah, so look, there's like one called feral human, which is like in your freshly bit, so inexperienced werewolf. Then you have wolfman, so it's like hairy, but you're not necessarily in the full form.
Yeah.
Got the lycan, which is like still kind of like that wolfman, like hairy person, but more wolf-like. And then you have the werewolf, which is like the full form, but the lycan is like more like, okay, now you're growing a snout.
Yeah.
You know, more the wolf qualities. And then there's one called canis. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's just right. Like when you're like, just, you know, master, like you can perfectly like control both parts human and werewolf.
There's look at you. I did not know that. One thing that I will say is that this whole venture made me very not excited for the new Wolfman. Ryan Gosling is going to be the new Wolfman. And I'm like, I don't need to see Ryan Gosling as new Wolfman.
Why? Is it just because he's Ryan Gosling?
I don't like Ryan Gosling. It's just really fucking weird. I don't know. I outgrew a long time ago, like, these white icons.
Yeah, like everybody I was told to like, especially when I was like going to school for film production, like every actor or filmmaker I've been told to like, I'm like, it's just some white dude. Maybe we should stop letting white boys go into film school. Maybe that's what needs to happen.
You tell them, motherfucker. I was always the one that was like, I don't give a fuck about Wes Anderson. I don't give a fuck about Paul Townsend. If there's an Anderson in the name, I don't give a fuck about it. Actually, no, this is, and I promise I'll stop like being too tangent-y, and I'll let you go on with your night. But I'm watching White Lotus right now, and holy fuck, I hate it. And as I'm watching it, I'm like, how the fuck? Because like everyone loved this show. And I actually worked at a resort. Like back in Florida, and I also grew up on a beach in a beach town in Puerto Rico, where the main employer was the resort which my dad worked at. And I'm like, and I'm literally like on the 5th episode, and there's only 6 episodes, and I keep waiting, and I'm like, do people just like think that it's funny to laugh at these absurd resort situations without realizing that like, yo, it really is like a thing, but it's okay because it's a satire. And it's like, yo, but it's a satire made by the very people that go to these resorts. Like, I don't feel solidarity from this motherfucker just because he decided to make a fuck ton of money off of it on HBO. So other middle class, because it's a class issue, I think. It's not even like a race issue, because I'd be seeing, you know, like, and people from all different types of identities be like, White Lotus. And it's like,
yeah,
I feel like people don't think through the authorship and the intention, and they'll just be told, oh, it's a satire, so, oh, okay, it's not serious, so it's like whatever. And it's like, I would rather see someone of a different persuasion try and make some sort, like maybe someone that actually worked this job that can now transition into filmmaking, rather than thinking of whatever this white man thinks that, you know, like, oh, this is funny because everyone is terrible. That is the joke. And it's like, I'm so tired of that being the joke. That's why I can't relate to Succession or any shit like that. I'm like, I'm tired of watching media that already tells me that it's fucking horrible. I know it's fucking horrible. I don't need your white ass to tell me that. And I don't want to watch white people being horrible for it. Like, fuck.
Like, there's no critique or anything. It's just literally, and I remember when White Lotus came out and I was like watching it, and then, you know, like when you watch an HBO show and then it'll have like the creator at the end talking about their show, and he was just like, oh yeah, it's just like a satire, like critique about like, you know, wealthy white people. And it's like, but where's the critique? Because it's
where
just
is it?
because it's like we're just watching the people like be shitty, you know, every
that's
episode.
It.
And then
that's
it's like it. People go onto Twitter and they're like, oh my God, you saw them being terrible. LOL, that's so funny. But I was like, there's still no like you can't do anything.
Like, oh, but don't you realize they're supposed to be terrible? And it's like, who is gaining something from this? I can tell you it's not Mike White. I can tell you he feels very comfortable being like, oh, isn't this clever? Motherfucker, you've never worked a resort like that. Shit, like, shut the fuck down. And also, like, there was like some aspects of the show where I'm like, yo, if this was like a real resort, the resort employees are the drug dealers. So like they wouldn't be like get your research right first. But you know he didn't care because he was like, oh, like, the staff are angels and this, and then it's just like it's so dumb. And who is this for? It's not being made, it's being made for the very people that you're critiquing, you motherfucker.
I really see this becoming a thing, and I see it happening now where it's like shows like White Lotus and even like you said, Succession, because I've been watching that and I'm kind of getting.
I can't. Succession is one where I'm like, I'm not crossing it because I want to see content from other people, man. And people think, and here's the thing though, like I literally, like almost everyone I know loves these shows, right? And it's just like, I really try not to shame them because I have a lot of respect for my friends or whatever, but it's also like, I hope you guys realize though, that your viewership matters. Because it's the shit that then HBO or whoever the fuck wants to make again. Like your viewership for Euphoria matters because they're going to give Sam Levinson another fucking show. You know, like it's a cycle that perpetuates. But if you actually ask or if you actually support the creators, and honestly, Jazz, that's why I was so excited to get you on the show, because it's like, yo, like this is where I want to see like the future of storytelling go. I don't want to put another fucking, you know, like white filmmaker on here to tell me about their new like horror show. Like I don't like, cool. You'll get some people paying attention to that. But I think we need to really become more intentional about where we put our attention, because especially now we live in an attention economy, right? Where, yeah, we're not paying for fucking Instagram. We're not paying for Twitter, but we're paying with it with our attention and the shit that we talk about and the shit that we promote. That's how they make their money. It's a fucking information economy now. And yeah, I mean, like, shit, I didn't mean to go off there, but
no, you're good.
But it's exactly what you say. Yeah.
It's like becoming a thing and it's going to be even more noticeable, I feel like, in like the future, where it's like we're gonna have more films and TV shows coming out where it's like about white people and how terrible they are, and then we're all gonna go watch the movie and it's gonna be like, yeah, white people fucking suck, but then it's like no further critique other than that, let's just watch white people be shitty, and then people are gonna make money off of it, like
period. Oh my God, that's just it. It's just
that's exactly
it's so
what's
fucking
happening.
Annoying. Yeah. Anyway, so that's werewolves. No, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, Jazz. I had a lot of fun, and I hope that you also had fun too. I'm staring at you.
I did. Thank you so much again.